All right, hello and welcome to episode 13 of The Merge, the penultimate episode of The Merge under its current brand.
I thought we were going to open the show today with hello.
I didn't. I said all right first.
Then so, you started a different episode with all right. Okay.
I'm really just happy I got a chance to use the word penultimate. It's a favorite word of mine. Like, I love that there's a word for the second to the last, or the second to the best, or whatever.
Is there like a trend ultimate? Like, can you like the second to last?
I don't know why it would be trend. I mean, pen doesn't have any two connotations to
get it.
I just like that. I think part of it is because there was that place in the Loop near Wash U, Riddle's Penultimate, that bar or whatever. I think for some reason, maybe, I don't know, something endearing about the place. I actually never went to it, but I was endeared by the fact that, like, it didn't claim to be the best. It claimed to be the second best.
Or I thought maybe it was like, this is not your last stop for the night, this is your second to last stop for the night.
Is that because it was, like, on the east end?
It was
end
on the wrong side, right, of the line where you could, like, be open.
It was on the east end of the street, but it was not all the way at the end where the Del Mar Lounge was, which is where everybody ended the night, because that was inside the city boundary.
Correct.
And thus could close later. There's a little bit of St. Louis bar hopping trivia for you. Inside the city, open later than just outside the city.
And then the end of the night, it pops across the river in Illinois, going through metal detectors.
I'm not familiar.
You didn't have any good nights then?
Well, I mean, the Del Mar Lounge is known for its good drinks. You know, the Sandinista was a classic.
Oh, God.
Anyway, we have clearly digressed into a major niche of our listening audience. And by major, I mean majorly small. Anyway, let's get into the episode. We open the episode with they've come back. Andrea gives us what looks like a very big foreshadowing when she talks about how much she loves Blind Side. I know I follow a number of ex-survivors on Twitter, and Aliza Orleans, who I don't remember what her first season was, but she was definitely in the fans' favorites as well.
She was in the 8th season?
I don't think so. I think she was... No, she was in Vanuatu, I believe. I believe she was Vanuatu, which is was the gender wars and then the All Women's Alliance that let Chris through.
I think you're right.
Anyway, she tweeted about how that was total foreshadowing of what was to come. And it sort of was,
Vanuatu.
Nailed
it.
Woohoo. All right. It sort of was foreshadowing, but she was able to cut that off in the past. But we'll get to that. So Rob talks to Natalie a little bit right afterwards in the dark there, after Natalie and Ashley have their little, yay, we're the final two girls celebration, which I thought was very odd, because there's not been a lot of, like, you know, the Girls Alliance or
right.
anything like that. And oh, by the way, like, it calls attention to you as this semi-alliance as it is. It didn't even exist.
Think they were genuinely concerned about Andrea making it to the end. They didn't like her, clearly. They didn't think she belonged.
Who's
they? The girls.
Oh, okay.
You know, and they didn't even express it otherwise. That, like, you know, while the three of them were kind of together, she was always the one that was, like, on the outs.
Well, but the thing, but it's, I guess this is just another example of some rookie, very rookie gameplay. You know, like, you don't do that. You know, you do that and you draw attention to the fact that the two of you have some sort of bond. And that's how...
I didn't read that much into it.
Really, I thought it was odd and very, very rookie.
That's been the calling card of Redemption Island.
Well, yeah, that's true. It's been the calling card of the season.
It's beginning to feel more and more like this is Rob's reality show where he tries to make it through...
Yeah.
17 other survivors
navigate.
To try to get to the end.
Yeah. So the thing I thought was interesting is I felt like Rob was getting very manipulative there in that conversation.
It's becoming more overt.
Yes. Yes, that's what I mean. As he said, he's talking to Natalie, and he's like, what were you and Ashley talking about over there? And, you know, and you know, we need to get rid of her and stuff like that. And I feel like he's really, really towing the line with his manipulation in terms of, like, getting overbearing.
And yet he's not been called out on
it. That's true. It's true. So I guess that's what you're supposed to do, right? Is continually push the envelope until somebody pushes back. And when somebody pushes back, you retreat quickly and regroup. But
no one set the boundary up. Here's how far you can talk about how much you're controlling this game without making it feel like
right. We're
being controlled.
Right. Cut to Redemption Island.
I was really excited that they had the conversation that we've all been wanting to hear.
Yes!
What in the world is going on between us? Like, do we have an alliance? You know, like,
which sucks.
Like, why did you throw me under the bus? All that stuff.
It let me down, though, because
Matt avoided it.
Well, Matt avoided it a little bit. And
he's like, oh, it's not for Jedi. Like, he shuts it down.
And she didn't really do a very good job.
I thought she tried to lay out most
she
of the salient
points. She did, but didn't do a great... I feel like she didn't do a great job. I mean, granted, where people...
Matt wouldn't engage her. Like, what was she going to do? I think if she had more time and more opportunities to argue,
that's
she
true.
Could have fleshed it all out. But
okay.
He really kind of dodged it. He's like, oh, I guess I'm sorry for ruining the game. Like, he kind of, like, plays it off.
Yeah, that was weak.
When Andrea was, like, genuinely trying to, like, figure out what had happened, she was just trying to do the post-mortem on her game, which I always appreciate. Like,
yeah.
I like it when
for
people
sure.
analyze their moves and say, okay, what... Where could I have taken this step differently?
No.
You know, why did you do the things you were doing? Because I think we could have had something, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is where... And I guess you're right about that, and I'll give you that. I mean, I guess this is where Andrea sets herself apart from Matt. Like, Matt, I think this is where Matt shows a lot of immaturity. I mean, he's shown a lot of maturity throughout the season in his dealing with being on Redemption Island, that sort of stuff. And on the flip side, like, I feel like he's shown... strategic slash intelligence immaturity here. We talked
more
about
strategic, I think.
Well,
like
yeah.
Intelligent.
Well, I guess I don't mean intelligent. I mean, I'll go with like metacognitive almost or
okay.
something. Like he and we've talked about this a little bit in past episodes. Like his just lack of awareness of himself. You know, not realizing what he was doing. Like, he still does not realize that he's the one who hung himself. That he's the one who hung himself by being wishy, not just being wishy-washy, but being wishy-washy and then exposing that plan to, like, the guy who's the last person you ever want to tell about how you were being wishy-washy.
I mean, while he was in the game, he obviously made some missteps, but, like, now that he's out of the game for the second time, or now that he's back on the Redemption Island, you can see that, like, he's done trying to think about the game.
That's true.
He doesn't want to think about it.
That's true.
He's like
done
mentally with... done with trying to think about the game.
So what do you think? So what happens if he wins Redemption Island?
Oh God.
Do you think it comes down?
I don't think he's gonna make a good case in front of that jury. I don't think he's gonna like try to like.
Well,
like,
I wasn't even thinking about that, but I mean, we've all sort of agreed
he's
that
he's
anybody...
not gonna have that drive to win in that final vote. Like, you know.
Well, we've all sort of agreed that whoever comes back from Redemption Island will basically need to win out to make the final.
Look like they're only going to need one or two wins.
No, I think it'll be two.
Three.
It'll be two. Because it seems very likely that they open the show on Sunday.
Finish out Redemption Island.
With the end of Redemption Island.
Yeah.
And then they come back, that makes five, so there's two immunity challenges and two votes.
And then we have a regular finale.
Yeah. I think anything else would be trying to fit way too much into a two-hour episode.
Yeah.
Will
the March of Heroes be in order of voted off or by...
No, it's
got
to be elimination, I would think. Well, I'm curious, though, to think about, to see how they handle, like...
Will Matt's name be there twice?
No, it'll have to be an elimination one. But I'll be curious to see how they handle, like, the three who exit at the same time. You know, if they'll be in order or if they'll be, like, together. You know, maybe they go by... voted order if
yeah
so that's probably what they'll do is the three who lose
not that it will matter not that I think
preferentially well it sort of does matter because that you know that I mean they do get paid like everybody gets paid on the show and
but it's all the same up until like last two or three spots or is there
I mean,
a jury payout
there's nothing explicitly out there officially but I've seen a number of structures and granted I mean it can change from season to season they should certainly could give them all three the same payout for it.
The only difference I was aware of was that, like, second place got 100,000.
Yes.
And first got 1,000,000.
Right.
I was aware of that.
Yeah, because Probst actually has acknowledged it in their second season, because he kept referring to Colby's $900,000 decision, you know, because he's guaranteed second place.
Right.
But yeah, as best I've seen, it's there's a step for every place you move up. Like the lowest, like first person out gets like $1,500, and I think third place was getting like $85,000.
Well,
like
Matt's
that.
Really improved his station then.
Yeah, and he's won his way there. So yeah, I mean, they could just pay everybody out the same who gets eliminated at the same time. But I don't know, just something to think about. But I mean, I guess there was some chance, especially if it was somebody like, you know, if it's Andrea or it's Grant who wins Redemption Island, like, I think they have strategic opportunities back in the game if they don't win the immunity challenges when they're back in the game. I don't think
Mike does not
really. Although, well, actually, he does. Mike does because of Andrea and Natalie. You know, they've talked
Ashley
a little
and Natalie.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry. Yeah, actually, Natalie. They've talked a little bit about do we pick up. I don't think Natalie will actually do it, but she seems like she could be convinced. But do you think Matt would just lay down if he wins out? Do you think he tries to win immunities, and if he doesn't win them, he says, screw it?
I mean, like, you're asking me if I can kill Scramble.
Yeah.
I think moves will be made with him involved. Like, people will come to him and, like,
yeah.
search him out.
But you think he'll be a passive player?
Or they'll either search him out or they'll vote him off. So it's nothing going to be of his own making.
Right.
Like, again, he's done strategizing. Like, he got two tastes of it and he didn't like it. And
You don't think that, like, the extra week or two, like, away from the game will refresh him? No,
just again, just kind of like his attitude. Like, you see how he carries himself in challenges. Like, he's just doing it to do it, and it's not like
yeah.
he's not throwing himself into it as much. It's not like he's quitting.
Do you think
he's
that's
just
working?
Not like, what
you think that? Do you think that's actually become like almost a winning strategy? And that
like his calm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that was the note I made. Is that he's working with such calm that he doesn't have the frazzliness of an Andrea who's so desperate to stay alive.
Yeah, and you think that helps him actually ultimately?
I mean,
I guess it doesn't matter ultimately, because even when he was really trying, he was dominating too.
Right. I don't know. I don't know that we know that one way or the other. I know that his calm is helping him not go crazy.
Yeah.
That's what we do know. So in that sense, yes, it is helping him.
I definitely liked how he treated her the second. I mean, the moment she arrives, like, I mean, he barely acknowledges her
yeah.
her appearance.
Yeah.
She gets her first hug from Ralph.
Right.
But then, like,
maybe she likes the furriness.
I don't know. That's not likely at all. I like how that when they start talking about it, though, like, this is what I mean by his lack of metacognition. Like, he doesn't realize, like, he doesn't even really realize what happened. Like, even the stuff that he should be aware of, he's not even really aware of. Like, he said to her, you were scared to make a move with me. And it's like, wait. No, you were the one who decided not to make the move. And thus became the target. Now, I'll give the, you know, it, at that point, the big move for Andrea is, okay, they're going to vote you out. Turn it around. Tell him we go with Zapatera and we vote out probably Rob, so you go after. And as long as he doesn't catch wind of it, you get him out while he still has the idol. But I thought it was really funny. And then he makes it sound like, you know, he tried to get her to go with Zapatera, which is completely false.
Right.
Completely false. So he's definitely living in a bit of a revisionist history.
He's had a lot of days to sort of rethink it and, like, recreate it in his head, so we can't really blame him.
We're on edit 33 here, right? I mean, one for each day he's been on Redemption Island.
Right.
So in the challenge, Ralph amazes us, I feel like, on on both ends of the spectrum.
He oh my.
Tears through the maze.
Oh my.
And then, I mean, the puzzle. I mean, you pointed it out.
He wedges a part of the word into the edge of the puzzle. He takes the flat edge, sticks it up against the edge of the puzzle, and it's clearly a word that's going to run on.
Yeah.
And at that point, I gave up on him. I'm like, you're going to lose.
It's just amazing.
He was still the only one working on the puzzle at that point, and I said, you are a real piece of work.
Yeah.
You are a real piece of work.
Well, I mean, again, from Twitter, Eliza points out...
We should have her on.
Yeah, we'll have to... Eliza Orleans, you should... You should contact us, Merge Podcast, on Twitter, all right? We would love to have you as a guest. But she pointed out, she's like, what did she say? I should find it here on Twitter. But she basically speculates on the possibility that he is illiterate. Which I guess ultimately we know not to be the case, because he has been writing down names. But the way he did that puzzle, it's amazing.
Have we actually seen him write the names? Is he just, like, kind of looking at the producer, like, help me out here, buddy?
That's true. I'm all fit.
Right.
I'm all rock. What? One more time?
Rock.
Oh, rock. Got it.
Okay.
Somebody else writes it for him.
Right. With a backwards E.
Is there an app? Yeah. Is there an app for that? Someone's out there with an iPhone, you just save it in the iPhone prints out for you. They've got a little HP printer. There's another sponsorship opportunity for them. So Mike wins yet another challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't pay as close attention to it now because it's just don't lose instead of you need to win. But I believe he's actually won all the challenges. Hasn't he?
He's won the last two. What was the one before that? Sliders?
Yeah, he was first in that one. Yeah, I think he's, what was the one with him and Matt and David?
There was a puzzle involved, wasn't there?
No, that was the tower, and he was the first done with the tower as well, the House of Cards.
That's an excellent observation.
So yeah, he has run the table here in terms of winning, and challenges where it's more difficult to win, because he's got more opponents.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely credit to Mike there. You know, it's been unfortunate since he got voted out and is getting less FaceTime. We haven't been able to award the Sears Craftsman Tool of the Week.
He's trying to undo that. He's trying to undo all his hard work.
So, I guess with a little bit of luck, he'll get back into the game and have an opportunity to make himself a tool again. By the way, what is... I need to make one quick comment. We didn't have any of it in this episode, but I watched... the Ponderosa videos on the CBS website.
Yeah.
And Steve also talks about God in his Ponderosa videos. Like, what is with the absolute godification of this
season? I wish there was somewhat of an alternative religion, or alternative, I'm a horrible person, somewhat of a different religion, a non-Christian religion, like, get converted in the wash of all of this.
So you're
evangelical
saying,
spirit.
So you're saying Christianity is the main religion, the others are just alternatives. Are you trying to incite holy wars?
No.
I've
already spoken against the whole Christianity thing anyways.
I mean, I have no qualms with that. I am unabashed. I think that's the un-word I'm going to go with. Not unapologetic.
It was a really unfortunate choice of words on my part. I apologize to anyone I offended.
It's okay. After the challenge, we get our daily, or our weekly, I should say, dose of Philip.
Yep. I wonder if, like, rice is going to be a touchstone for him once he leaves the game. Like, if rice comes up as an option at dinner, like, he's just going to go off on the waiter about this rice being an option. Like,
oh, I thought...
Like, he's going to go to Chinese restaurants, and it's going to be on. Like,
yeah.
That's just it.
I thought for a second that...
Don't get him near a sushi roll.
I thought you meant, like, that was going to be his theme, like, if he makes the final... And the finale, as you like to call it.
Stop it. Getting better.
If he makes the finale, that would be like the theme of his jury argument. You know,
I would like sit across the campfire and like throw grains of rice at him, like just in sight. You know.
Well, I would. It would be nice if he just did like a, you know, sort of like one of those like second grade type projects where you take the word and you write it vertically and then you need to then come up with a word to describe. You know, so he's like, rice, let's talk about the R, you know.
I wish you'd been watching Celebrity Apprentice this season. Gary Busey would define words using like that same thing, like an acrostic with like words for each of the things. It was ridiculous.
Yeah?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's Gary Busey we're talking about.
No, I know. Again, for all of you reality television fans, you know what I'm talking about.
So he goes off on the girls, which is pretty impressive. Oh, right before that, though, I thought it was impressive how frank Philip was being about the fact that two people in that group, and in actuality, three people from that maybe. From that group, we're not going to be there anymore.
Oh, when he's talking about the rice?
He's like, yeah, they're talking about rationing the rice. He's like, you guys are thinking about this, right? And in a couple of days, one of us isn't going to be here anymore. And a couple of days after that, another person's not going to be here. Like, it was amazing how completely nonchalant he talks about that. I mean, that's just like, I don't know, it's just funny to me, because like, it feels like it's the one thing that like everybody tries to move gingerly about, and he just doesn't even care.
Well, he's shown a clear lack of decorum, so none of it surprises me.
True. Do you think that stems from his confidence that he's not the person?
I think it's also part of his game. He is playing a game. Like, it's hard to say that he's not playing a game anymore.
I guess, yeah. I mean,
he knows what his plan is, and he's executing his plan.
I mean, I get the biggest question, I guess, ultimately, is just the line. Where is the line? Where is the line between the game and him? You know, like, you know, is it 10% game and 90% him? Because that's what I think a lot of people want to think. I think a lot of people want to think it's 99% him. And
no, 1%. I don't think it's 99% him and 1% game. I do give him credit enough to.
I don't think I go to 50 though. I mean, I think what I think it is. Maybe he deserves credit for this. You know, maybe it's he knows what he's got. Well, you know, he knows the tools he's got available to him, and so he's like, I know I can be an annoying personality, so I'll turn up the volume on that. And, you know, it's not necessarily him turning on the game as much as it's just him, you know, turning off the voice in his head that normally would go off and say, hey, wait, this isn't really socially acceptable, or this is, you know, it's like the urge has always been there for the first 52 years of his life. He's just learned how to check it, and he's turning off that check.
Like, at tribal, he was totally normal. Like, I mean, you know, just asking the question about choosing, you know, whoever wants to eat, and he handled it.
That's true, you're right.
Very rationally, like, and in control.
Not one of the guys thought, and neither of them objected, and I would probably agree with that. I think everybody watching figured
Natalie.
It's Natalie. You know, there's a like, slim 1% chance for Rob,
right?
Because it's Rob.
Just
and
the,
like, you just
the
don't
deference
want
to
Rob.
Exactly.
Yeah. But,
but with immunity, you can do that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Can we talk about the worst strategy discussion yet in the game?
What's that?
Grant being like, hey, Rob, you know what's a good idea? Voting out Ashley. Like, and then talking about Natalie possibly flipping somewhere within the final four. Like, flipping to what exactly?
Yeah, oh, right. When he was like, we need to get rid of her, and if we do that, then Natalie
will never flip.
She'll never flip. I don't know who she flips to.
Who is she flipping to?
She can
grab Phil and grab the Redemption Island guy.
Phil and the Redemption Island guy, I guess. I mean, that would be quite the hodgepodge alliance. Quite the ad hoc alliance there. But, I agree with you. It was sort of random. That was a very bromance moment, because I don't know if you noticed, he opens by looking at Rob and goes, bro.
What is that?
He does. He looks at Rob and he goes, bro. And it's right after, I believe, Rob had said something and closed his statement with the word bro. So he's like, yeah, we definitely need to take care of that, bro. And then immediately after, it's Grant turning to Rob and going, bro. We need to talk about Ashley. I mean, it was very bromance, and later
we've got a problem.
Yeah, we've got a problem. Yes, very good. Even later in the episode, you see the two of them like doing their like pseudo puppy like battle thing where they're like
there's the music going
shadow boxing, and then they put their arms around each other.
It was like It was like the kid playing with the dog right before it's being put to sleep.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It was so bad.
Because at that point, we know Rob is,
we know.
Is planning to vote for him. But one thing I don't get, before we get to immunity, is Rob keeps talking about Ashley, and some of it I can understand as gameplay, because he's talking to Natalie about how she's, you know, I can see her trying to convince you of things that aren't really in your best interest, but telling you they are, stuff like that. Like, I see that as gameplay, but he gets into the confessional, and even in the confessional, he talks about, you know, Natalie is innocent, Natalie is pure, and Ashley is trying to corrupt her, and all this stuff. And I'm like, is this just like, do you think this is a little bit of island fever? Like, he no longer can distinguish his gameplay from his, from, like, rational thought? Like,
yeah, I think he's starting to believe in his own BS that he's shoveling
right
out, right?
Yeah.
Like, my plan is perfect. What is she doing? Like,
right.
Why is she corrupting my plan?
Right. Well, that's what I don't get, is it's like, does he legitimately think she's, like, a bad influence on Natalie in life?
No.
You think this is just the gameplay?
And I think also maybe this was not the most, they didn't get the most returns on, like, interviews this week. I mean, really,
the best
interview left is going to be Philip and Rob, and Philip didn't have much of a part to play this time.
Well, Rob was great otherwise this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, and Probst actually tweets about this. He says he's a reality producer's dream, the way he talks in those confessionals, is he knows how to lay it all out. I mean, he does have, you know, four seasons worth of Survivor of experience doing so, but, I mean, it was a great, well, I shouldn't get to that yet, because that comes to post-immunity. So immunity, I mean, Ashley wins very
time trying. Out, time
yeah.
out, time out. Going back to Grant.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I put in my notes, we overestimated him.
You think strategy-wise?
Yeah.
Why?
He never sees it coming. Like, how would you not, like, one of his worst moves is after the immunity challenge that he didn't win. You know, I feel like I'm kind of skipping over. We'll get back to it, but
yeah,
he isolates himself in that blanket on the beach.
Oh,
that's a terrible move. Yeah,
oh, I didn't notice that.
He like pulls himself off the side, makes a little blanket, plops himself down. Eventually, Rob finds him there on that beach, on that blanket.
Oh,
and they have
right,
that conversation.
Right.
Like, why would you isolate yourself in that situation? You know, and why would you even like? He also gets really upset when Rob comes to him and says like, "Yeah, Ashley's coming for you," and he gets really upset. It's like, man, that girl's a snake.
Right.
After he had just gone to Rob and been like, hey, we should get Ashley.
I know, yeah. Well,
like,
it's,
she's just
not
doing to him what was done to her, you know, what he's doing to her, and somehow he thinks it's some sort of trait, like, some sort of betrayal.
Right.
I think he doesn't see it. I think
well,
we overestimated
this is,
him.
No, I mean, yes and no. I don't think we overestimated him, because I don't think I ever really was giving him a whole lot of credit for his strategy. What I was giving
him. You didn't
him,
see him eventually break away from Rob and trying to take him down.
No. I mean, the only
hint, it was going to be one or the other. It was never going to be both.
The only hint that you ever saw there of that was that one episode, like four episodes ago, where you see that confessional and he says, I'm my own man, I make my own decisions. And then you find out later on
it's
he was talking
fish.
About the fish that Zapatero had caught. So, I mean, I had never lent a whole lot of credence to his strategic moves. Yeah. It was really just, you know, ranking him as high as I did in terms of, like, best chance to win and stuff like that was really a factor of the combination of his alliance with Rob, which was very strong. I mean, here it broke only out of necessity. You know, that was not, he was not supposed to go home here. And his ability to win immunity. That was what I was giving him. And the fact that I feel like he would have been a very difficult person to sit next to at the final tribal council, in that I feel like he would have been able to win a lot of votes, because he was a very sociable guy, very nice guy to everybody there.
I have a problem evaluating Rob's relationships with anyone in the game, because for me, they're all pawns, you know.
Well, yeah.
So it's hard to evaluate Grant and Rob's relationship, because he's manipulating all of them. He's manipulating Grant. He's manipulating Natalie. Like, they're all
pawns. Right. But they're all varying degrees of manipulation. I mean, they're all ultimate. I mean, they're all legitimate alliances with some sort of value, some sort of numerical value assigned to them in Rob's mind in terms of like how willing I am to break this alliance to get myself further in the game. And Grant's, I think the only people who were ahead of Grant were Philip and Natalie, simply because those were the people that Rob feels most comfortable sitting next to in the final. In the final
that
vote.
That still puts Grant in the bottom half of his six-person alliance.
Yes. The difference is that Philip is this, like, wild card that throws it all off. Like, he's not in the... Like, that's the funny thing, is that the alliance, for all intents and purposes, looks like Rob, Grant, and Natalie.
Right.
And Philip is this just sort of, like, extra wild card who everybody thinks is a pawn, but nobody quite realizes Rob intends to bring to the end. Which I don't understand why nobody realizes.
I think they all realize they want to bring to the end.
I don't think so. I mean, you heard Ashley talking. Ashley thinks it's getting the final three is her, Natalie, and Rob.
Right. That's true.
Grant thinks the final three is Stealth R Us. But I think Grant also is ultimately indifferent between Philip and Natalie, which one of them is the third in their group. I mean, I guess, you know, we skipped over Immunity. I don't think there's much to talk about there. Except
hey, my girl came up big. Okay.
She came up big when she needed to.
And that's the best in this game, when people who are on next in line win that immunity.
True. And it seems like she at least had an inkling that she needed to. It was not nearly the, like, you know, I'm the only person left from my tribe type inkling. Like, I know I need to win immunity.
Right.
But yeah, she did come up big.
Well, she knew that the suggestion she threw at Rob was not the first thought in Rob's mind, you know? Like, when she comes at it with it, it's not... She even says, like, she was kind of cool on it at first,
well,
but
yeah,
came
but
around.
She seemed... I don't know. She seemed wishy-washy after that. Like, she seemed like Rob was coming around on it. And ultimately, I think that was a smart play on his part, because this occurs before the immunity challenge. And, you know, he ultimately makes her feel like she's bringing ideas to the table, and that she's, you know, a voice in the alliance. What I'm amazed by is that she feels like she's in the alliance. Because I don't feel like we've seen much, and ultimately, you know, this could be just editing, but I don't feel like we've seen much of Rob making promises to Ashley.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing to me, actually, that she doesn't feel more like it's her, she's next in that group.
Right.
I mean, the only person she should have felt like she was ahead of in that group is Philip.
But she's not.
The other thing I wanted to comment on is I'm so glad we finally see what I've wondered about for years of watching this show. And that's survivors getting sick after the reward. I mean, year after season after season, you see these rewards that are these massive feasts.
Right.
And sometimes they look like they're just good food. But sometimes they're like, you know, it's nachos or it's burgers. You saw the pizza that they ordered. I mean, you're talking about greasy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I know from experience myself, when you cut out grease for a little while from your diet, even just a few weeks, the first time you have that grease, it messes you up.
Yeah.
And I feel like you never see it affecting them. And I'm amazed that they're not just all rolling around in the sand like, oh, what did I do? I gorged myself. I'm like such an idiot. I mean, you're eating rice and water, and that's it for weeks on end. I'm so glad we finally got to see somebody, like, take a fall from the reward.
Yeah, no, I guess I was more glad to see that the girls have maintained each other's hygiene by personally sticking their noses in the other's armpits and just being like, you know, Natalie, not so bad today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's impressive. I'm more impressed. I mean, I guess they've been grooming each other. But, yeah, I mean, they don't even have, like, major pit hair going on there.
No, they've been trimming with those
tools.
They've
been using those scissors,
Craftsman tools from Sears.
You're right, yes. The Sears Craftsman tools.
Waiting on those checks, Sears.
Yeah. I'll send you an invoice. So the last thing I wanted to talk about was we sort of alluded to this earlier. The confessional with Rob, where he's talking about doing the dirty work of, you know,
right. I gotta go do dirty work because everyone else is too stupid to do it.
Right,
and
that's
a great line.
It was a great line. Him talking about it was perfect. He's like, I gotta tell Natalie we're voting for Grant. I gotta go tell Philip that, you know, we're gonna vote Grant out. He's gotta play it like we're not voting Grant out. We're gonna go Grant. Let him decide which between Philip and Natalie. You know. And at the same time, it's Rob's voiceover with the video of him running around going to everybody. I mean, the only thing that I think could have made it even better is if they actually showed more footage of it and then sped the footage up and it's Rob, you know,
put
it's
on
like...
Wacky Sex.
Wacky Sex?
Wacky Sex from the Benny Hill Show.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, you need to catch up.
But yeah, just...
He of the guy status updating about the Scream movies this week. I'm so disappointed in you.
Oh, dude, that was great.
No, it wasn't. It was less great than you thought.
The fact that, the best part about it was that is the status update didn't refer directly to Scream, but instead just says Chris is educating Stacy on the history of the Woodsboro murders. That's good. Come on. A little bit of you was like, that's good.
Well, I was curious. I have not seen the Scream movies, which is not
what?
Really... Oh, no. You are not allowed to be incredulous, Mr. I've not seen a single minute of the Godfather trilogy, okay? You are not allowed to be incredulous.
Oh,
I've missed the Scream trilogy. You've missed the Godfather trilogy.
Yeah, the difference is the Scream trilogy came out when you were alive.
Okay.
There's a slight difference there. Like, these were big movies.
Maybe one's one of the greatest sets of films of all time, and the other one is just cheap shtick, okay?
No. We're going on this tangent right now. Get in the car. The Scream movie, I will grant you, Scream 3 was not very good. I actually was
Godfather 3, terrible.
You're right. So it actually holds up in comparison, except for the fact that it went to a fourth, for their genres. Scream was great because it was simultaneously horror movie and horror movie commentary.
Meta horror movie.
Yes! This is why you would love this stuff. You love Community, which is like meta. You know? It's as Jeff Winger says, everything gets jammed up its own ass.
Don't you quote Winger to me.
It's
Don't you, dare.
You would love I can't believe I'm gonna have to make you watch them, and I will watch them with you. It's their Scream 1 was a great movie in its the combination of it being a horror movie and at the same time being meta. Scream 2 slips, but is still up there. Scream 3 it takes a bit of a dive, and I've heard that 4 is it completely fell off the meta wagon, and it's just
straight horror.
Yeah.
Well, it's got Alison Brie, so that's a bonus. Annie. Edison.
Annie from oh, really? I didn't know she was in there.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is it looks like it's going to be meta and from the previews. But
I'm unfortunately
heard,
not enough of a movie critic to know how to defend Godfather properly against your critique of the Scream films, which you're clearly a very big fan of.
Yeah.
But, you know, AFI can't be wrong. I'm going to go with the American Film Institute on this one.
Well, I'm not saying... I mean, there are movies that I should see, certainly. And certainly they rank ahead of Scream movies in an overall list of movies, whatever. But I feel like my position is equally defensible because of the fact that the movies came out during our lifetimes,
no,
whereas Godfather
not even out Academy Awards versus coming out during our lifetime. It doesn't.
Well,
I refuse.
I'm not just saying coming out during our lifetime, and they were big movies. I mean, these were movies that grossed a lot. I mean.
I refuse to take that as
how many classic movies have you seen?
Like, whatever.
Have you seen Citizen Kane?
Bleep My Dad Says has like millions of viewers. Does that mean I should be watching Bleep My Dad Says?
The show?
Yes.
No.
Like, 2.5 Men blew up. Very popular show. I should be watching
it
that show.
It was good. But the movies were good. Scream rates a 7.6.
But you're trying to say that like grossing money is like some sort of evidence of quality of film. That's
okay.
The defense you just used.
Well, no, I was piling that on top of the fact that they came out when we were lot.
I get that it came out during my life.
But it was
a
good
lot of
movie.
Movies that come out during our lives.
It rates a 7 point something on IMDb. The top 250 on IMDb bottoms out at 8. So Scream is not that far out of the top 250 on
IMDb.
What
the masses think of a movie does not affect like my appreciation of it.
Didn't you just go to the... Oh, you went to AFI. I thought you went to IMDb. That's
the right. AFI. A little better than the IMDb.
IMDb rates
for the sake of our listeners,
Godfather. All right. All right. Tangents complete.
Yes. The immunity challenge, you and I had a similar thought of why aren't the fish bones going up like in some sort of pattern or order?
Yeah,
right?
The random...
However,
However,
if you make it that, then it becomes more puzzly, then the advantage becomes more to Rob, and I appreciate my girl being able to stay alive, but being more of a dexterity fine motor challenge and less of a figure it out challenge.
But, I mean... So you're anti-challenges that favor people who are intelligent?
I'm for challenges that give you a different test. This was a test of fine motor skills and not a test of
okay.
Can you figure this out, right?
Okay.
And also, this is another one of those rush but go slow.
Okay, I'll
that,
give you that.
That falls in your camp, too.
I still would prefer the order. I mean, because...
It would have looked nice.
Well, that, and it's... That's not really puzzly. I mean, it's not like you pick up a stick and you're not sure
you
like where
like,
it's gonna go.
But you gotta size it out. You gotta like budget it out properly so that you like.
Yeah, but you just lay them down on the ground and you see the longer ones go at the top and the shorter ones go at the bottom. This is not.
Oh, you make it sound so easy.
It is. It's comparing lengths of fish bones is not difficult. It's not.
What if I want to put the word up against the edge of the board, Chris? My name's Ralph too.
Yeah. Well, I mean. You're not going to win challenges, though. I mean, I think those are the best challenges where you are cross-pollinating skill sets. You know, physical with mental, puzzle with fine motor. You know, stuff like that.
Let's talk about the player in the middle.
Who's the player in the middle? Rob? Philip? Natalie? Okay.
Yeah. She's playing two sides. And
oh,
she's
okay.
being asked to play two sides. And I feel
yeah,
like
she's only she's a player in the middle, not of her
girl,
own not of her own.
I
choice.
Know, but for a 19-year-old girl who like clearly has like, you know, is gonna be outwitted by a lot of these people just on life experience alone,
mm-hmm.
I think she's doing a respectable job of not losing her cool in front of Rob
she's
breaking down in front of Rob.
She's shown Rob a lot of nerves.
Yeah. But she is holding up in front of Ashley.
Actually, I think is good. I think her breaking down in front of Rob is good because it makes Rob feel like he's in control in terms of, like, I comfort her, she comes to me for help.
Yeah.
I don't think it's gameplay on Natalie's part.
But it is to her advantage.
But it does play to her advantage.
Yeah.
I'm amazed, absolutely amazed, that Rob didn't vote out. Change his mind and decide to go that.
Yeah, I think he should have given him more thought. I agree too.
The only thing I think he's let the end game start to cloud his vision a little bit, because the end game is not nearly as close as it seems, and quite literally right now. Because in the game we are at, it looks like we just went from 5 to 4, but we didn't just go from 5 to 4. We just went from 6 to 5.
Right.
So we're not as close to that the finale as we are.
Why? Why do I make one mistake and get hammer cord?
Because it's so ridiculous. Like, have you not heard people say the word before?
I just always thought they were saying it wrong.
Did you think they were pronouncing the word that spelled F-I-N-A-L-Y finale? And they didn't know how to pronounce that word instead?
That pronunciation just seems so wrong to me. I don't know where I got it in my brain, man.
Have you seen the word epitome? How do you pronounce that one? Epitome? I think, because his vision, his plan appears to be him, Natalie, Phil at the final three. And because of that, that means his only option at this point.
He's wedded to that.
Yeah, like I think he's, and that's what I mean, is he's letting that vision cloud his judgment.
Yeah, I agree.
And he seems to have noticed at least a little bit that the Ashley Natalie combo could be dangerous, but he's not let. I don't think he's thought it through enough to realize how much they could impact the game.
Probst plays it out of trouble. He's like, having two votes instead of five is a powerful block, you know?
Right. But the difference is, well, okay, at that point, I mean, I guess he could flip his vote. Although, actually, if he flips his vote, the only thing he does there is he curries favor with Grant. The flip side to that, though, Ben, is then he then has to explain himself to Philip and Natalie and Ashley when he gets back, and that puts him immediately on the next.
For Natalie, she's got to be careful, because she's got to be careful with how many promises she makes to Ashley, because if she wants Ashley's vote,
yeah,
she's got to play it just right. Like, she's got to really get in there and be like, look, this is the decision I had to make, and it's not one I wanted to,
yeah.
It's the one I had to. And I don't know how she's going to play that, but that is the play that she's got to make if she wants Ashley's vote. Now, there have been instances where people have gone against their friends and still gotten their friend's vote at the end.
Yeah.
That's happened.
Well, and that sort of comes out here in the confessional at the end with Grant leaving. He says, you know, he's at peace with everything, which, you know, he said, and he also doesn't realize how Probst reads the votes, that the way they were read clearly indicates that everybody voted for him. But, and so he just thinks one of Rob or Phil flipped, when in actuality, only both of them did. He seems to be at peace with that and ready to vote for one of them,
Philip or
Rob, when it comes to the jury, if he does end up on the jury. Quick aside, what do you think about...
I don't know, he says... It's weird that he doesn't know the votes, because he even says, like, you're going to see her name twice, and then my... Yeah, whatever, you use my name twice, and then
right.
Her name three times.
But he didn't catch on that there was only one red for Natalie, right. And the reason there was only one red for Natalie is because
there was only one.
What do you think about... What do you think if Rob was frank with Grant? What do you think if he said, those girls, you know... Well, I guess it would have been difficult then.
It's too easy for them to go back on him, you know? He didn't have room to make that play.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's too easy for Grant to be like, you know, girls, like, this is our chance. You know, Rob or whatever. I'm still hoping Rob uses that idol to blindside somebody.
No, I mean... But I mean for Rob to say to Grant, like, the girls are hell bent on you getting voted out and there's nothing I can do about it. And Philip is down with it. And I can't turn it, you know what I mean?
Interesting.
You know, so, to try to help preserve, you know, like Rob seemed
to preserve his vote with Grant.
Right.
Okay, I see.
And Rob seemed to be legitimately torn up, you know, torn about voting out Grant. More so than he's ever been, I've seen him about voting anybody else out.
Yeah.
Even when he had to send Matt back to Redemption Island a second time.
Right.
I mean, do you think that play works? Do you think being up front and just saying, like, hey...
But then still voting for him anyways?
Well, at that point, you have plausible deniability.
I mean, like, I just need to not look like I'm away from that.
Right, exactly.
That's a good... Hey... You're playing the game, dude.
I mean, I think there's some legitimacy to that there. Like, or maybe at the very last minute, you know, like just before trial, you pull him aside and just be like, hey, like, I wanted to tell you because you're
right.
My boy.
I didn't want it this way.
And I didn't want
you're
this way.
You're my boy.
All
you're my bro.
I can't do anything about it. Those three there are going to vote for you.
But for a guy who's controlled the whole game, that's a hard...
See, I think it would be good, though, because the thing is he even told the girls, like, I think Grant knows it's him. So if it blows up at tribal council and Grant, like, tries to start lobbying, I don't think it really blows up that badly. And by the way, even if it does, Rob's got that idol in his pocket, so if he worries that one of them is, that they're going to try to vote him out there suddenly, he can play it. I think that would have been, like, you know, a great, like, level 5 type move.
What, invite the vote and then play the idol?
No, not necessarily that, but just the, like, letting Grant know right before tribal to try to preserve a vote on the jury if Grant ends up there. Alright, so we wanted to close this week's podcast by Discussing all the seasons of Survivor, Dalton Ross, a favorite read of both of ours,
Entertainment Weekly on the
Entertainment Weekly website, and in, I assume in the magazine as well. I just don't get it. He writes a weekly column reviewing Survivor episodes, but this week, in addition to his review, he's also posted his semi-annual ranking of the seasons. And, you know, I haven't paid close enough attention to notice, do the rankings change, like, or is he simply just inserting the new season each year, or each season?
You know, I would need to see past seasons, but he has kept the first season at the top of his list every time.
Yeah, which I have to disagree with. Just simply because, I mean, I understand, like, you know, it was the first, and so you sort of, like, have to pay homage to it, but...
It's not so much homage as the feeling you had watching that show. And I remember feeling like television was changing when I was watching that show. I was like, this is different. Like, this is going to change what we watch. This show is huge. Like, that summer that it came on and all the different challenges and the way the votes went down, it was riveting.
I mean, I understand that and I agree with it to some extent. Although I've always hated that Survivor was always the show that got the credit for starting the reality television revolution.
A Real World?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I've always thought that
but
MTV...
But this is more reality competition.
Yes. Well, but before that, MTV had been doing their Real World Road Rules challenges.
Not the challenges. They were doing Road Rules, which...
No, they were doing challenges, too. They were doing challenges.
That show's trash.
Not like...
That show was so trash.
Hold on. Not the challenges that they do now, where they just bring people to some exotic location.
They drink and, like, do competitions.
But, like, it was actually... It was very Road Rules like. They were getting in RVs and driving around and doing challenges.
Right, that show was called Road Rules.
No. This was a Real World Road Rules challenge. It was done like I don't remember.
I don't know.
But it was
the structure
already
of this one was very different. Are you willing to like bet money on that Real World Road Rules challenge was already on at that point?
Yes. We're going to document it right here for the world to hear.
No, that's right.
Let's do it. Let's put a little something on it.
What, the $6 you owe me from the MVP bet?
Sure.
No, I don't. No, that's my money.
What's the difference? You want to make it 10?
No. I don't feel that strongly about it.
Then why'd you ask me if I put a bet on it?
I just want to know how strongly you felt about it.
You're such a tease.
Such a tease. That's what she said.
Yeah. I definitely so number one was Borneo in Ross's list. Again, I think it should be a little bit lower. Two and three are.
You had the snake and the rat speech.
Yeah.
The snake and the rat.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen the season, so I ultimately
like,
can't.
When was the last monologue we saw like that? The snake and
the
rat.
Oh, there's been a lot. I mean, everybody. I mean, maybe not quite chock full of metaphors the way. Was it Suhawk?
Suhawk. Can you identify a speech with something like the snake and the rat?
I mean, there's been some bitter jury questionings, but I mean, I haven't seen the season, so I ultimately can't evaluate, but I know that the show was not as good as, it doesn't hold up to these
no,
seasons
since.
They've
had so many opportunities to improve the show,
right.
I get that. But again, it's more of the feeling you had watching that season. It was amazing. All
right. Well, ranked two and three are returner seasons. Heroes versus Villains, which is all returners.
That's three.
Or veterans, I should say, which is ranked three.
Right.
And ranked two is Fans versus Favorites, which was Micronesia.
I love that season.
That was a great season. I mean, you had Eric making arguably
the worst
move in Survivor history, giving away immunity to quote unquote like win, put himself back in the good graces with the girls.
He thought something. Like they hated him, so he's like, "I'm gonna give you this, and then you'll not hate me anymore."
I mean, this is you know barely post-pubescent boy being brutally manipulated
by 30-something-year-old women,
by 20 and 30-something women.
No chance.
Who have you know a decade each of manipulating men under their belt. And I'm definitely okay with those up there. Others from the list that you want to, from that top 12 that you want to touch on?
I did not tune into Amazon, which he's had for.
Yeah, me neither.
And I saw pieces of Pearl Islands.
Ditto. Actually, Pearl Islands you can get on Netflix, and I've actually got it. I've got it queued up, so it's going to come soon. As you can Borneo as well, so I've got them both queued up.
So, 6 is Palau with Fireman Tom,
yeah.
Which I thought was great.
7 is Samoa. I think Samoa's got to move up, though. I mean, I at the very least, because I know Palau and I can compare the two, right. I think Samoa has to move ahead of Palau. Argue possibly ahead of Pearl Islands and Amazon, although I don't know. Cause
we don't know. We don't know what to say. Give me a take on Marquesas at 8.
Marquesas is one of the ones that's fuzzy in my mind. That was where I started to drift on the show. That was season 4.
Mm-hmm.
5, 6, and 7 are the seasons that I did not watch all of, and saw, I think, at least one episode of each of those seasons, but definitely not all of. Marquesas, I may have missed some seasons there. I know that was, or some episodes, I mean. I remember there being a hunter who, that was really the beginning of the you don't want to be too outspoken of a leader theme in the show.
The genesis of the fly low strategy.
Sort of, yeah. Not necessarily the fly low strategy. I mean, Survivor Australia was really the genesis of that. I mean, Tina Wesson was the first fly low winner. In Marquesas, you know, it was not so much the fly low as it was the don't fly high. because it would get you voted out. But that was Rob's first season, and they caught on to him there. He got voted out, I believe, pre-jury. I think he was the last to go before the jury.
You want to skip to the bottom?
Well, Token Cheese one is the last one in the top 12 that Ross has there that I think could use a bump up or two. I didn't think
I thought 14 could use a bump. 14, he's got Survivor Panama with Terry Dietz in his way to the final, you know, 3,
yeah.
And then getting gutted by Danielle DiLorenzo.
Yeah, well, and then All-Stars. I mean, All-Stars, I, for me, it's a special season, because that's the one that brought me back to the show. It was season 8, and like I said, 5 through 7, I had drifted, and I feel like All-Stars was perfectly timed. Like I said, at least for me, I don't know about for the public in general, but it was perfectly timed in that it was like, you know, the tough thing about Survivor is every season, the first 3 episodes can be tough to watch because you don't have any attachment to anybody in the show, and there's a ton of people. You've got minimum 16, possibly as many as 20,
right,
that you're trying to keep up with, and trying to keep up with all of those people is almost exhausting when you're watching, and so it makes it difficult to get into the show.
Yeah.
And so what Survivor All-Stars had going for it was you were already emotionally invested in everybody there, or at least most of the people there, if you'd seen a fair number of seasons. And it was the one that brought me back in. I mean, it was the birth of the Rob father, you had the drama with him and Lex, you had drama with Sue Hawk and Richard Hatch, you know, she ends up leaving because she feels like violated by Richard Hatch being naked or whatever happened. I thought it was a really great season and deserves being bumped up higher. I mean, 13 is what? It's not even in the top half. I think it deserves a higher ranking.
This season it's 16 out of 22.
Yeah, I think that probably actually is where it deserves to be. I mean,
I feel like it's generous.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's hard to estimate because this is the first season we've done the podcast, and so I've gotten really into this season.
Right.
Because of the podcast, but so I feel like it makes it difficult for me to compare this one to other seasons.
I agree. But I remember Danny's season. He's got Danny's season, two spots below it. I remember rooting for Danny and like getting involved in that season.
Guatemala?
There were a lot of like memorable characters, but like, that had some drama to it.
Yeah, I believe Guatemala, that was one of my favorite exits ever. I believe that was the one, and I think it was Rafe. I'm not certain, though. was the guy who got voted out, and right after Probst snuffs his torch, he turns back to the tribe and goes, "Blindsided, nice!" And I just, like, I loved his enthusiasm for the game. Like, yeah. It was not the bitterness that you get from so many people, but instead, like, you guys pulled it off, and, like, I had absolutely no clue, and so you get props for that. There are some down there that, at the bottom that I think deserve higher ranking. I think Africa deserves a higher ranking. Dalton Ross has it at 17. I think it deserves a higher ranking mainly because I think it was a turning point in the show for production. I think the team, the production staff, saved that show. I believe, you know, that was the first show where they did Tribal Shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully believe, I don't know, I haven't researched it, but I fully believe that this was an audible, that they did not plan that from the beginning, that they saw it the way things were shaking down in the tribes, and they were like, we are screwed, this is going to be the most boring pre-merge set of episodes ever. And I think they saved the show, but and ultimately it's only the third season, but...
So maybe they saved the series?
That's what I mean, is they saved the series there, I think, by realizing we need, right away, and acting on it, we need to make this show malleable. We need to be able to... We need to change this show up. Otherwise, there's going to be a formula that people are going to learn, and they're going to apply it, and it's going to get real boring by the third time we've executed the same formula.
Yeah.
So I think that deserves a bump. I think Vanuatu deserved a bump for Chris Daughtry's run to the end. Or Doherty, I should say.
I didn't want to call you out for it.
I thought Fiji always gets slammed. I think it deserves at least to be ahead of Thailand. Thailand, I don't know well. Again, like I said, it was a boring one, but that was one where... That's one that's just perennially referred to as a bad season. Fiji, I thought, was great because that was the birth of the fake hidden immunity idol, I believe. Because Yao Man finds one, and he constructs a fake one and buries it in the same spot.
Nah, I don't know. You can't beat... was it Eliza? Who was it?
That was later on.
How is this an idol?
Right.
That was the best hidden immunity idol, or fake idol.
That was the best it played out. But Yao Man made the first... was the first to have the idea of building a fake immunity idol and burying it back where he found the real one. And that was huge because it's played out. I mean, we've seen it happen in Survivor Micronesia, what you just mentioned. It also happened in Gabon, where Bob Crowley made an impressive fake immunity idol. I mean, that was great. I would never have thought it was fake based on what he had built.
And then the bottom was Judd's season, which was last season?
Yeah, it was last season, which is exactly where it deserves to be.
The failed Medallion of Power.
Jim
Johnson getting voted out too soon.
The tribe got voted out. The tribe split up by age. The thing that I think gets this that season too much of a... makes it take too much of a shot is that it's sandwiched between two... Russ and Rob seasons.
Right.
And though this season wasn't so great, so that doesn't really cast that big a shadow, but it comes immediately after the Heroes vs. Villains. And that was just an epic season. And then even this season, while it was not great as a season, the first three episodes of this season were fantastic.
Right. So it's kind of the reverse of what you were just talking about, where like the first three episodes are so hard to get into. This one, it was easy to get into.
Right.
And then it just turned stale.
But this one also broke the mold in that it has returners, and so, yeah. You know, that in and of itself.
I think the thing that's going for this season is they've set it up for a really interesting finale.
Well done.
Thank you. They set up a really interesting finale with eight people still alive for the prize, and you've got the most chances for curveballs here at the end than you have in previous finales.
Yeah. So ultimately, what do you think happens here? Rolling out. Let's operate under the assumption that there's one Redemption Island challenge left. And the winner comes back in. Who do you think comes back in?
I'll go with Mike.
You think it's Mike?
He wants it. He's not broken like Matt is.
Yeah.
You know?
I would agree with that. I would definitely agree. I think it's him or it's Grant, because I think Grant will have fuel in terms of having been, you know, having come directly from the game, and so he wants to get back there so close, you know.
Yeah.
But I agree. But Mike has shown total dominance there, so I think he's going
to
come back.
You know, it's interesting with Grant, because I think Rob would have no problems going right back to him.
Oh, of course he does, as long as Grant's willing to take him back.
Right.
Which maybe
which Mike doesn't have the benefit of.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting thing that could happen is Grant coming back.
Yeah.
Possibly Andrea. If Andrea came back, that would be pretty interesting too.
Yeah.
But not nearly.
Ready to get back to there. Like they would be totally content with just sending her onto the jury.
You don't think Rob would turn use her to turn on Ashley first and then?
No, because if she gets the jury, like he can't take that chance.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So really, Grant's the only one with like an opportunity to kind of be in the game, you know, without having to win immunity.
That's probably true. Simply because, well, except that, well, yeah, I guess they would probably vote out Ashley first at the next immunity challenge, after the next immunity challenge, and then, but then Grant would be trying, they'd be trying to get rid of Grant at the one after that, because Rob wants Natalie and Philip next to him.
So what's your pick?
For the winner? For the overall winner? Gosh, that's tough. I'm a coin toss. It's a coin toss between Mike and Rob for me. I think Mike has such a good chance of winning this thing. The only problem is that he's got to win three straight challenges to do it.
Which he's already done.
Which he's done. but it's not going to be he's had the luxury in the last several challenges of not having to win them, just having to not lose them.
Those last two is going to be more female friendly. It's going to happen.
Like, well, just
balance.
It's going to be a balance endurance type challenge. I really hope they do that for the final challenge, because those are my favorite. Is that it's such a poignant end to the run of challenges that they do, where it's, you know, there was one that I thought was really good. The they held a bow and arrow, like you had to hold it drawn. And there was a little like piece of like tissue paper, essentially, about a centimeter away from the tip of your arrow, and so you couldn't let go of it. Like that I thought was a great poignant end to the season, when you can do the hold still endurance, but not like ridiculous where you're balancing something. You know, you're balancing all those bowls where that's going to just topple onto. Just your own pure determination to hold a position.
Yeah,
and that's it. I think those are great.
If I had to pick one, I think I'm going to be going with Rob. I mean, it sucks that I can't be more
take your horse
unconventional.
Take Ashley.
No, I can't take Ashley. I, she has not made a path to the end.
Yeah,
you know, she's not made a path to victory.
Well, the funny thing is I think she's starting to, but I just think she's starting too
late. So late.
Yeah, if she started even just an episode ago,
yeah,
I think it would have been perfect timing for her.
She's taken the chance with Steve,
yeah, and
to grab girls. Ashley,
yeah,
or Andrea,
yeah,
instead of being the shallow princess she's shown herself to be sometimes.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh well. Well, thanks for tuning in this week, guys. And our next episode will post on Monday at 1 instead of Thursday at 1, as the finale will be on Sunday.
Let it go!
No, it's so great. It's so juicy. It's so fantastic.
Thanks for listening. All
right, thanks for listening, everyone.